Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hello everyone, this episode of Luke's English Podcast is sponsored by Audible. They are the internet's top provider of downloadable audiobooks. And if you'd like to download a free audiobook, just go to audibletrial.com/teacherluke or just click one of the Audible logos on my website. Now let's start this new episode of the podcast, and here we go. You're listening to Luke's English Podcast. For more information, visit teacherluke.co.uk. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Luke's English Podcast. How are you doing? I hope you're all fine and well and healthy and enjoying whatever it is you're doing. If you're sitting on a bus, I hope it's not too awful. If you're on a train, equally, I hope it's not too awful. I hope the train is moving towards your destination without any delay. So wherever you are, whatever you're doing, welcome back. This episode features another chat with Alex Love, who was on the podcast recently in episodes 366 and 367. And I decided I'd get Alex back on the podcast today for several reasons. The first reason is because he is now in Edinburgh at the festival, and his show seems to be doing very well. In fact, so far, every performance has been completely sold out in advance, and he's making a nice profit. I'm very happy to hear that, and I thought that we could get a little Edinburgh report from Alex and actually have a normal conversation without it being derailed by poor internet connections and other distractions. And in fact, that's what we've managed to do, as you will hear. The second reason I brought Alex back is to do our own Luke's English Podcast pub quiz, in which we ask each other questions and test our knowledge. And that's what you will hear in part two of this conversation. I have divided this conversation into two parts again to make it more manageable for you. In part one, we talk about Alex's show. That's this episode. We'll talk about Alex's show, some details about the culture of pub quizzes in the UK, and also we go off on several quite instructive tangents about stag and hen parties, male strippers, the Smurfs, and the anatomy of giant squid, which are large sea creatures with tentacles. Now that sounds quite random, but it's not really. It's actually perfectly logical, and it will all become clear as you listen to the conversation. And I think there's quite a lot to learn about British culture in this episode, as you will see. There's also quite a lot of vocabulary to watch out for, and I will go through that with you in just a moment. Then in part two, that will be the second episode, you'll hear Alex and I playing our own pub quiz, in which we ask each other various questions in order to test our general knowledge. I expect that by the time you listen to this episode, Alex's Edinburgh show will be over, and all his shows seem to be sold out anyway, but what the hell, I'll mention the details of it anyway. So his show is called How to Win a Pub Quiz. It takes place at 12 o'clock lunchtime at The Stand in Edinburgh in rooms 5 and 6. I don't know how he manages to occupy two different rooms at the same time, but you'll have to go and see the show in order to find out how he manages to defy the laws of physics. But anyway, it's at The Stand in rooms 5 and 6 until the 14th of August. What's the date today? The 12th of August today. So you never know. You might be in Edinburgh. It might be a chance to catch one of the last shows. All the details and bookings and stuff can be found on the Ed Fringe website. And the link, the specific link that you need, can be found on the page for this episode on my website. Now, I mentioned vocabulary. And so I'm now going to go through some words and expressions that you might want to notice as they come up in this conversation. So I've listened back to the conversation and I've made another list of words and phrases that you're going to hear. So this is language that you might not know and which you might want to learn. I'm not defining and explaining all the vocabulary here. I'm just encouraging you to notice it. And hopefully, I'm making it a bit easier for you to notice all of this stuff. Okay. Now, being mindful of language while you're listening to this podcast is important. If you're switched on and attentive, taking mental note of different features of English as you move through these episodes, then you're in a much better position to retain words and phrases and add them to your own active vocabulary. Also, if you're into studying while you listen, you will find all these phrases written on the page for this episode, and you can then look at them. You can look them up in a dictionary, and you can try the Oxford, Cambridge, Macmillan, or Collins dictionaries online. They're all freely available, which is nice. So now I'm just going to read out each phrase, and you can try to notice them as they come up naturally in our conversation. So here we go. So we start with the expression "old habits die hard." For example, it just goes to show that old habits die hard. So that's old habits die hard. Then the love interest. She plays the love interest in the movie. That's the love interest. A hen do. There was a group of girls on a hen do sitting on the front row. A hen do. A stag do. There was a group of lads on a stag do in the audience. A stag do. A mixed bag. How was the show? It was a bit of a mixed bag, to be honest. A mixed bag. Self-deprecating. For example, we make lots of self-deprecating jokes. Self-deprecating. A bit hit and miss. The show was a bit hit and miss, to be honest. A bit hit and miss. Inconsistent. It was quite an inconsistent show. Inconsistent. Bland. It was a bit bland and boring. Next one. I died on my arse. He absolutely died on his arse on stage at the show last night. I died on my arse. To slag someone off. For example, we used to slag off the entire audience in our show. To slag someone off. To badmouth someone. For example, we badmouth the audience at the beginning of the show. To badmouth someone. Next, it's frowned upon. Being brutal with a hen do is frowned upon. You're not supposed to do it. Whereas it's okay to insult a stag do. So that's the expression to be frowned upon. Next is a sash. There was a girl on the front row wearing a sash. A sash. Next one is just the phrase, the first album I ever bought. The first album I ever bought. For example, Smurfs Go Pop was the first album I ever bought. Next, we have the word anthropomorphic. For example, Smurfs are quite anthropomorphic. Anthropomorphic. Next, we have the gestation period. For example, humans have a 9-month gestation period. So that's gestation period. Next word is promiscuous. For example, everyone says she's quite promiscuous. That's promiscuous. Then we have to beat around the bush. For example, come on, don't beat around the bush, just say it straight. To beat around the bush. Next one is to cast aspersions. I don't mean to cast aspersions on Smurfette. To cast aspersions. And then to hear something and to hear about something. So the difference between to hear something and to hear about something. Then we have a squid and a giant squid. And then the word tentacles, for example, they have 10 tentacles, whereas octopuses have 8 limbs. Then we have 10 inches in diameter. So the expression in diameter. For example, their eyes are 10 inches in diameter. Then we have the word a beak, a beak. So, for example, what do birds have at the end of their faces? This is what birds have at the end of their faces. It's a kind of a, it's like the mouth of a bird. Or in fact, the mouth of a squid. So that's a beak. And then the expression, your eyes are too big for your stomach. Your eyes are too big for your stomach. And then the word dismal. Dismal, which means terrible. And the expression, to come in third place. Like you come in first, come in second, come in third. And the sentence, Paul is coming in a dismal third place. Okay, so that's it for the vocabulary and for this introduction. So let's now join the conversation I had with Alex Love yesterday afternoon. Watch out for the vocabulary and see what you can learn about things like hen do's, stag do's, male and female strippers, the Smurfs, and giant squid. Also, there is a bit of swearing in this episode, so you've been warned. But that's it for the introduction. I will now let you listen to the conversation. And here we go. Hello.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm all right. How are you?
Very well, thanks. Your sound quality is much better than it was before.
Well, we'll see.
Oh, a little bit of robotics there.
Yep. Old habits die hard.
They do, don't they? How's everything going?
Yeah, really good. I really can't complain. It's been going much better than I ever thought. So every day since Saturday has been sold out. And this Saturday and Sunday are sold out. I'm about four tickets away from selling out tomorrow, and then about another 8 or 9 from selling out on Friday. So it could be sold out for all but one date, which is going to be nice.
That's brilliant. Oh,
great. Are you recording, by the way?
Yeah, I am recording this. I've already started recording. So, okay, well, that's really good. I'm glad to know that it's going so well.
It is, yeah. And today there was a lady who actually got on stage at one point to read out a script that I've written, and she plays the love interest. It turns out she's actually a booking agent for a comedy, some theatres, and she wants to book me for certainly one date in the Lake District at some point. And she says she runs a few others as well, so there may be scope to actually tour this shit, which is going to be nice.
So is that the kind of the next step then? After you've done if you do a successful show at Edinburgh, what is the next step?
I honestly don't know. Well, last year I did a successful show, but it really resulted in, well, I suppose where I am now. It gave me a bit of leverage to approach a paid promoter to do a show. So yeah, it's still taking. Well, the first two shows it was taking a bit of getting used to people actually have to paying to see me perform instead of it being free, and I was just a bit paranoid that they think it was shit. So it was a bit. Initially, it was like, oh, are they going to hate me? And then, you know, Saturday happened, and then it's just all been amazing from there, really. So it was a full house, and there was a hen do in the front row, and, yeah, it was great fun. And then it just sort of set me off on a bit of a roll.
That's good. There was a hen do in the front row.
Yes. Would you like to explain to your listeners what a hen do is?
Do you want me to explain what a hen do is?
Yeah.
Okay. So when someone gets married, well, the man... and the woman, they both have like these parties before they get married. And so the men go away with all their friends and they get really drunk and have a crazy night. And that's called a stag do, right? A stag is like...
You didn't invite me on your stag do, did you?
No, I didn't. No,
you didn't.
I had very limited numbers of, you know, places to for
the friends. Pizza.
Only the select few were invited onto the stag. Yeah, only the elite. Yeah, yeah. So no, you didn't get invited on my stag do.
Did you invite any of your listeners?
No, none of my listeners got invited. In fact, I've never talked about my stag do. I think I've never talked about my stag do on the podcast. So,
is that for a reason?
Not particularly. No. No, I'm sure I did mention it in the episode I did about the wedding. Cause I did a wedding episode.
I must have
mentioned the stag do in that. But other than that, I haven't really talked about it very much. But,
okay.
You know, my stag do was, you know, not completely mad. It was quite, I wouldn't say sober, definitely not, but it was quite sensible, really. We just booked a house. There was, I don't know how many people, about 10 people. We booked a house in the Welsh countryside, and we did some sort of outdoor games, like we did some archery during the day, and we drank a lot of beer.
Nice.
Not at the same time, because obviously that would be...
That would be hazardous.
That would be hazardous, dangerous. So men go on a stag do. A stag is like a male deer, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yes, they've got antlers, famously.
Hunters
like to shoot them and then display their heads on the wall. I've never really understood why hunters like to do that. They chop off the head of the stag.
An amazing animal.
Yeah.
They kill it and then chop off his head as some sort of... Somehow it's better to have... You know, just their head than this amazing creature actually being alive.
Right. They just stick the head on the wall. It's really weird, isn't it?
Yeah.
Anyway, those are stags, and that's a stag do. And women also do it, but for women it's called a hen do or a hen party. a hen is a female chicken. I've no idea why it's called a hen do or a hen party. Do you know?
I don't, actually. I should, but I don't.
Hello there. I'm interrupting myself here in order to actually explain the origin of the expression hen do and also the expression stag do. Now, it's not common knowledge. Most people, I think, don't really know the reason why we call them a hen do and a stag do. But nevertheless, I don't like to leave questions unanswered on this podcast, so I've done a little bit of fact checking, and I can now tell you, and it's actually pretty simple. The fact is that although today a hen is a female chicken, and also the female of various other types of bird as well, but specifically the female chicken, in the past, hen didn't just mean a female chicken, it in fact meant the female of any type of bird. Okay, so it was actually a much broader word meaning a female bird. So if that was just a nickname, meaning like a nickname for the female party in this case. So hen was a much broader term meaning female. That's why it was used as the nickname for a woman's party or the party that the woman has before she gets married. And similarly, stag, although stag now means the male deer, in the past, stag was a much broader term, and it meant the male of many different types of animals. And so stag also was a nickname used to talk about parties held by men before they get married. So that's it. So these days, hen and stag are much more specific, female chicken, male deer. But in the past, there were a lot broader terms. There were much broader terms. Hen meaning female in general and stag meaning male in general. That's why those words were used for the nicknames of these two types of party. All right. So good. I'm glad I cleared that up. It's now time to get back into this fascinating and riveting conversation that I'm having with Alex Love. And here we go. I don't think it's something that everybody knows. And it's not something that you need to know, really, if you're going to infiltrate British culture. You don't need to know why it's called a hen do. You just need to know that it's called a hen do, and that's it. That's the end of the story. By the way, in the United States, they call it a bachelor party and a bachelor, right, bachelorette party. Stag do and hen do in the UK. So the thing about a hen do, and this leads us back into the conversation we were having about show. Yep. The thing about a hen do is that when women get together for their hen do and they come to your comedy show, that's usually, well, that can be problematic, can't it? I mean,
it can.
What do you think about having hen do's in your show?
I think, well, when I was doing Edinburgh in 2011 with Paul Langton, we were doing a show called A Mixed Bag, and we thought the title was hilarious because it kind of was a bit self-deprecating. So we did, you know, we could self-aware that, you know, oh look, it's a mixed bag. Yeah, well, it is a mixed bag. Yeah, well, it's called that. So because a mixed bag also means, well, it can mean a bit hit and miss. So it's inconsistent, basically.
So if someone comes to see your show and then they say, oh, it was a bit of a mixed bag, really.
Yeah,
that means
it's inconsistent.
Some
of it's good, some of it's bad, but a lot's just a bit mediocre.
Okay.
So a bit bland.
Right.
A bit boring.
So that's the name of the that was the name of the show, and you got
that was the name of the show. So we had the first Saturday was really tough. We were full, but we were only full because the rugby fans watching the rugby came in to get out of the rain. So it didn't go very well. And as is known in stand-up comedy circles, I died on my ass.
What does that mean?
Which means, it means when you get no laughs. So as a comedian, you like to perform and you know, you like to get people laughing. To die on your ass means you do your set and you get no laughs at all.
Yeah, and it feels like you're dying on stage.
Yeah, and it does. It hurts. So that was the first Saturday, and then we were about to start the second Saturday show, the next week, and we did a bit before the show where we slagged off the audience, which means you you badmouth them.
You insult the audience.
You insult the audience. So we had a bit when we were hiding behind this curtain, which didn't go all the way down to the bottom, so you could still see our feet probably. And we were performing on top of a wooden pallet as a stage, and so we'd go behind the curtain, we'd speak on the microphone and slag off the audience before the show, because it was to say, oh, this looks like a bit of a rough crowd, and we pretend that they couldn't hear us.
Yeah,
but they could, so because we had the microphone. So we had a hen do. We were just about to start the show, and then the hen do comes and sits in the empty front row, and we think, oh dear, this is going to be bad, because hen do's, you know, they've had a bit to drink, and you can't be quite as firm with a hen do as you could be with a stag. So you can be quite insulting to a group of men, and that's fine. But with a hen do, you've got to play it a bit more carefully, because they, you know, sometimes, I mean, you can't be, it's kind of frowned upon to be really brutal with women in the audience. Well, and rightly so.
Especially a hen do, because particularly the hen, it's like her special day, and you can't insult her, because she will get sensitive and upset about it. They're much easier to offend.
Yeah, well, a lot of planning has been put into this, and you've got to think that there's going to be all sorts of different roles within the group, and you could get it really wrong just from being rude.
Yes.
So we were saying, oh, there's a hen do. Oh, shit. And that got a massive laugh. So we thought, right, we're just going to have to play with this. And they were lovely. They were really fun. And we tried to engage them as much as we could in the show. And, it was one of our best shows that year. So that was nice.
That's great.
So,
Yeah,
what were you going to say?
I was going to say, and then this year you had another hen do, did you?
I had another hen do on Saturday. And I started the show, and they were, again, you see a pattern emerging. The hen was in the front row. I think their friends had put her there deliberately.
Yeah.
And I was just talking, and just started the show, and I said, oh, why are you wearing a sash? And
she was wearing a sash.
Yeah.
What's a sash?
So like a ribbon thing, basically.
Okay.
That you wear over the shoulder.
Yeah.
And it goes round to the waist and in a loop. Right. Is that a fair description of a sash?
I think that's a very good description. But you have to probably include what kind of material it's made from.
It can vary. It's very rarely plastic. It's often shiny, cottony stuff, silky stuff.
I would say it's a kind of a fake silk, or a silk effect material, which seems to be a bit shiny, and it in fact may even have something written on it. It's usually about, it's got to be about 10 centimeters or 5 centimeters thick.
Yep.
And it's this band that goes all around, as you said, and it's made of shiny material. And it might have something written on it, like a, you know, sort of Sandra's hen do or something like that.
Sandra's stag do.
Sandra's stag do. Well, yeah, I'm Sandra. I'm having a stag do. What are you saying? Yeah. Sandra's hen do would be written. So she was wearing a sash, and you said, why are you wearing a sash?
Yeah, so I said, why are you wearing a sash? And she said, it's my hen do. So I said, well, what sort of show are you expecting? And that got a big laugh, because strippers, so people who take that, do I need to describe that?
You need to describe and explain everything.
So it's, a stripper is someone who takes their clothes off, often performing a dance routine in return for money. So that is their job. They take off their clothes and they get paid. So
and there's male strippers and female strippers as well.
Male strippers and female strippers, often for the stag doos and the hen doos. The stag doo goes to a strip club where they see women take their clothes off and performing dance routines. And then it's quite common for the, well, I suppose they often hire, you don't really get male strip clubs, do you? No. Well, I suppose you've got Chippendales.
I think that instead of actually
Magic Mike, I suppose, isn't it? But it's like shows, isn't it? Specific shows instead of clubs. So they just have a stripper night at one place.
Yeah.
But it's not like a permanent thing. It just happens every now and then.
Yeah.
Whereas a strip club for men is more like a permanent fixture, because men like to see naked ladies.
There's more of an industry built around the gentleman's strip club. Than around the ladies' strip experience, where like men will get together of a Friday evening and go to a strip club, whereas women usually have to do it as some sort of group event, like an organized thing, usually as part of a hen do,
or maybe a
birthday or something like that. Often they will actually rent the person, they'll rent an individual stripper to come to their house or to come to their party. Don't ask me how I know all about this. Okay, this is just my general knowledge.
Have you hired any strippers?
I've never hired a stripper, and I've never been hired either. Although, if the podcast thing doesn't work out, if the English teaching doesn't work out for me, I've always thought that I could go down that avenue.
Well, you could ask your listeners if they'd like to pay you some money to see pictures of you without any clothing.
I think that might be borderline illegal.
Well, you always talk about wanting to earn some money from the podcast, so there's an option you could explore.
True, I'm always looking for new revenue streams. I always imagined that would come from me offering English teaching services, premium English teaching services. But I suppose I've got to really think about what my audience really want. And they might want photos, videos, or maybe even live appearances in which
you could do English language teaching, but when you're stripping.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. That's no one's doing that. I'm pretty sure no one's combining English teaching with removing their clothes.
No.
And you know, a lot of vocabulary there. It's quite fertile for vocab. Obviously, you've got the clothing and also the body parts. You know, so
yeah,
I'm sure that there's
the pace as well. There'd be probably different terms for, sometimes it's slow, sometimes it's quick,
right?
Probably sometimes in between those two things. So
yes, probably some phrasal verbs like, would you like me to speed up? Would you like me to slow down?
Would you like me to work on the other one or keep going as I am at the moment?
Take off, put on. You know, all those sorts of things.
Yeah, so there's an idea for you. So there's this idea that for Hindus, there's always a male stripper somewhere, you know. Usually they've bought him. Or maybe he'll just appear. A man will just appear and take his clothes off and they haven't hired him. And that, you know, but then, you know, they're probably not going to enjoy that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there's this idea about them hiring strippers for Hindus. And so I said, you know, implying that she wanted me to take my clothes off.
Yes.
So, and that got a big laugh from the audience. And then later on in the show, I talk about music, and the first album that I ever bought was the Smurfs Go Pop, which I was 12 years old, and it was 1996. And yeah, that was the first album I ever bought. You can't change the first album you ever bought.
Smurfs Go Pop.
I
don't know. Is it necessary to explain who the Smurfs are?
Well, the Smurfs are some small blue people who have adventures.
Right.
And, that's basically what they do.
They're small and they're blue and they wear white hats. And
I'd have thought that your listeners know who the Smurfs are.
They might have different names in different countries. I think in
Papa Smurf.
Papa
Smurf. He's the one with the red hat, isn't he, and the red trousers. Because, a lot of the Smurfs are shirtless, aren't they?
Topless.
Yeah.
Going back to the stripping thing that you talked about.
Yeah, so maybe that's what they do. Maybe that's how they make a living. And they've only got one. In the original cartoon, they only had one girl Smurf, so I expect she was quite busy.
Is that right? There's only one female Smurf.
Yeah, but I think there are more now. In fact, there are more now. But initially, it was just, for a long time, it was just Smurfette on her own.
Really?
And yeah.
Bloody hell. She was... Yeah. That must have been quite time-consuming and difficult for her. Does that mean that she produced like all of the new Smurfs we've got now? Are those her offspring?
I don't know. I don't know about the sexual history of Smurfette. Smurfette, I should say.
Yeah. Well, it would, you know, if Smurfs reproduce in the same way that humans do, which I imagine they do because, you know, they communicate using English, they live in similar little societies, they're basically anthropomorphic, you know, they're not humans, but they are very, very similar to humans. They're probably the closest to humans, right?
Yeah.
They're closer to humans than any other animal, right? So you'd imagine that they also reproduce in the same way. Maybe the pregnancy, the gestation period is shorter. We don't know, but it would certainly suggest that Smurfette was, she's like the sort
promiscuous.
Of, promiscuous, that's what I'm trying to say. Yeah, she was.
Yeah.
She seemed to have got around the whole village.
Had a lot of cock.
Yeah, let's not beat around the bush, Alex. Everyone had sex with her in Smurf Village. Why not? I'm not judging them. I'm not judging the Smurfs on the way that their society operates. That would be sort of racist of me, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it would
to start
would be
casting aspersions over the way that the Smurfs live their life. Obviously, by our Western European standards, it's not normal for an entire village to be set up based around one woman. But I don't know how they do things in the world of the Smurfs, so, you know, I'm not going to judge.
So, Yeah, so the Smurfsco Pop was the first album I ever bought. And it's basically cover versions, so other people's songs, but the Smurfs singing them, basically, and changing a few lyrics. So there's one song on there that I play in my show called Mr. Smurftastic, which is a version of Mr. Bombastic by Shaggy.
Mr. Smurftastic?
And, yeah. And it's a terrible song, so but it's got kind of got a, if you remember the original Mr. Bombastic, it's kind of got a bit of a beat to it. So it's I suppose it's, is it hip hop, Mr. Bombastic?
It's ragga. It's ragga, isn't it? They call me, yeah, Mr. Bombastic. That, yeah, one. Romantic. You know that one.
Yeah, that's the one. So it's a Smurf singing that in a high voice, but he's trying to, he's doing a high voice, but he's trying to make his voice low. So it's, it's some skill has gone into that, or I just can, a computer.
I can play it, Alex. You might not be able, yeah, to hear this. You'll have to trust me that this is being played, but I'm now going to play a little bit of Mr. Smurftastic, just so that my listeners know what you're talking about. Here it is. Okay, you can't hear this, but we're listening to Mr. Smurftastic right now.
Yeah, good.
Mr. Smurftastic, really fantastic. Mr. Smurf, that one.
That one, yeah.
That was,
yeah,
was that your favourite track on the album?
No, it wasn't. It's just this, probably the stupidest, okay, track on the album. So I play it because it's stupid, and I think it's quite funny that that was on the first album I ever bought.
Yeah.
So I played that song for them, and I only play like a 5 seconds because there's only so much you can take.
Yeah, yeah, because it becomes incredibly irritating after a while.
Yeah, it really does. So I just play a few lines of it, about 5 seconds, and then during when the hen do was in the front row, I started pretending to take my clothes off, just showing her I was wearing a jacket, showing her a bit of arm, and then waving my shirt about, and they really liked it, strangely.
Okay, good.
So yeah, I was playing the room, so which means playing around with the people and the circumstances you have in a particular room that, right, you're performing in. Right.
Sort of improvising, based on what's happening in that room at that,
yes,
particular time. Okay.
Yes.
All right, great. So you got this promoter in there who might put you on a little tour of in the Northwest.
Yeah. Yeah, potentially.
That's fantastic. I'm very glad to hear, sure, that. So
yeah,
this could be a
Smurftastic.
Yeah, this could be your launching pad to, first of all, nationwide success, and then.
Well, I don't know about that.
Really?
Yeah, it's. You just got to enjoy it, whatever it is. It's it's probably part of a longer thing, mm-hmm, but.
Where are you going? Yeah, where are you going with the whole comedy thing? I mean, what's, do you have the sort of a 5 or 10 year vision?
No, I don't. I'm just seeing it as it comes, really, seeing what happens, and then just reacting. Well, I moved up north, so that was kind of a bit of a. So I moved to Manchester, which is it's easier to make a living out of comedy, where it's less expensive to live, mm-hmm, than London. So that's part of the plan, I suppose. But yeah, I'm still getting to know the circuit. I'm not getting enough paid performance. I was going to say gigs. Your listeners know what a gig is, don't,
yeah,
they?
I think they know what a gig is by, yeah, now. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. So I'm not getting enough paid gigs to live off. I still have a full time job, mm-hmm, but maybe it will lead to something. Edinburgh can, things can happen quickly in Edinburgh. Yeah. But yeah, it's nice to be doing a show that's so far sold out for. Well, all but one performance.
That's really good. That's really, really good news. It's great that you got this successful show, and I'm very happy for you. Fantastic. Smurftastic, as you said.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Yeah, yeah.
So the show is all about pub quizzes, right? How to win a pub,
yes,
quiz. So
yes,
you told us last time that the first half of the show is like stand-up. I guess you're,
yep,
just, you're doing stand-up. You're maybe working the room and all that sort of thing.
Yep.
The second half of the show is where you do a pub quiz with the whole audience, right?
Yes.
Now, just why the pub quiz? Why did you choose to do a pub quiz themed show this time?
Well, I've been doing it for a couple of years, and I came up with the idea. It kind of evolved a bit because I don't think you've heard my joke about giant squid, have you?
No, I've heard about your giant squid joke, but I've never actually.
Yeah,
heard.
Well, I was
I've never actually seen it happen live. The last time the last time I performed a show with you, I was the MC.
I was about to go on.
Go on. You explain what happened.
All right. So I was waiting to go on, and you were MCing, and we were running a bit behind schedule. So we were running a bit late with our show. We started a bit late, so we would have finished later. So I was ready to go on, and you were MCing, and then you forgot that I was on, and they called an interval. Oh, no. And I was running the night as well, and we were running late. So I thought, I just won't go on, and then we'll be able to finish on time with the headliner, who was Sarah Pascoe that day.
That's right, Sarah Pascoe, who is now famous from television and all that sort of thing. She was on our show, your show, in fact, at that point. Yeah, I completely forgot to introduce you onto the stage, and I was really looking forward to seeing this. This giant squid material, but I just completely forgot that you existed.
Yeah,
just the lights, the adrenaline of the performance meant that I just completely forgot about you. I'm really sorry because I want to see your giant squid thing. You obviously can't repeat it now, can you?
No, not really, because it relies. So how it works is it's about giant squid anatomy and
a giant squid anatomy, so like
the body of a giant squid, so their genetic makeup basically.
What is a giant squid?
Well, it's a squid, which is
really big,
a creature with a head and some tentacles, and it lives in the sea.
Yeah,
and is often pink or reddy, yeah, but a reddy orange color.
Yeah,
and
sorry,
what were you gonna say?
I was going to say, isn't it like an octopus?
No. Well, it's similar. It's similar to an octopus, but it's different. An octopus has 8 legs and a giant squid has 10.
Okay.
So they've got 8 legs plus very long tentacles that they use for catching prey.
I see. Okay. So, and the giant squid is like a squid, but really big.
Yeah.
All right then.
Yeah. About they can get up to about 15 meters in length, so they are pretty big.
Huge.
Yeah. So they've got a massive eye, which is 10 inches and approximately 10 inches in diameter, and then they've got how they eat is in the middle of their tentacles. I expect your listeners not a squid is, Luke, but
yeah. Well, they do now because we've obviously explained it thoroughly.
Of course, they know what a squid is.
I don't know. They might have. Of course, they know about squid, that the squid exists, but it might have a different word in their language. Like, you know, what is it in Spanish? Calamari. Squid. Calamari, right? Calamari. So they, of course, they know about the existence of squid, but they just might have another name.
Yeah. So in the middle of the tentacles, so underneath their head is they instead of a mouth, they have a beak. Like a bird.
They have a bird under their head?
No, they have the beak, so the nose and mouth bit of a bird, basically.
Yeah.
as a mouth.
All right. Okay, so they've got a beak, but inside all those tentacles, there's a beak in the middle.
They use that to eat.
All right. Okay.
Yeah.
Great. Yeah. That's not the joke, is it?
No, it's not. No. So I say that the worst way to be killed would be eaten alive by a giant squid, because it's trying to eat you, but it's got you, so you're going to die, but it's just trying to eat you with a little beak, which is it's a bit annoying. And then I say, what's the matter? It's a phrase. Are your eyes too big for your stomach? Right. So they have enormous eyes. And then I have to explain to the audience why that joke works.
Right,
Yeah, so there's a bit more to it than that. So
You obviously have to see the joke happen live. In its natural habitat, and you're not.
Yeah, I don't think I've done it justice.
No, you haven't just. You obviously haven't just performed the joke to us, and you haven't given it away. But essentially, it's about a giant squid
anatomy
and being eaten alive by a giant squid, and the fact that their eyes are much bigger than their stomach, probably because they've got massive eyes. They've got massive eyes.
Yeah, just enormous eyes. Yeah.
Yeah, and so you as you're being eaten by the squid, you say, "What's the matter? Your eyes are bigger than your stomach." Anyway, people have to come see your.
Do you want to explain that phrase? Do you want to explain it?
Yeah, I'll explain it. So if your eyes are bigger than your stomach, it means that your desire to eat is actually bigger than your capacity to eat. So, for example, if you look at a cake, you might think, oh, yum, 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 I'm going to eat that entire cake. but you get halfway through it and you're full and you feel sick. And then someone could say to you, oh, obviously your eyes are bigger than your stomach, which means that
you couldn't eat at all.
Yeah, you're much greedier than your stomach capacity will allow. Okay, right. So there you go. So now anyone who comes to see your show will be pre-armed.
Squid.
With all of the...
Yeah, there you go. There's a pun.
Pre-armed.
Yeah, because they've got lots of arms.
Right. Okay. There you go. Everyone will be prepared now for that joke. So when they actually do come to your show, then they'll actually see the joke happening in real life. It's very difficult, Alex, when jokes happen on this podcast because, you know, humour is often the last thing that you understand. And I've experienced this numerous times, not just on my podcast, but in my pretty much everyday life, you know, because I talk to audiences, I talk to groups of students of English, and sometimes jokes happen and no one realizes, just there's no realization, nothing. And it's not just at work and at comedy, also at home. Sometimes I'll make hilarious word jokes and my wife is just like, what was that? And I'm like, that was, never mind. You know, so, you know, it's a regular occurrence. But anyway, so you had this material about the giant squid.
Yeah, and it was going quite well. And I thought, oh, how about doing a show with bits of trivia and interesting facts? And then I thought, well, what brings facts together? A pub quiz. So, and then I thought people would probably like to play a pub quiz in my show. And that's how I came up with the idea.
Also, the pub quiz is just a really popular thing, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a bit of a British institution, as they say. So, pub quizzes are everywhere, and people they're very popular. People like going to them and playing. So do you want me to explain how the pub quiz works?
The typical English or British pub quiz as a phenomenon?
Yes
please. I'd like to just give us a brief description of the pub quiz as a cultural phenomenon. Go.
Right. So it's in a pub and you get into teams in the pub, but generally teams of about four or five, and you compete against other teams who are also in the same pub. Mm. And then you get an answer sheet. And then there's a quiz master, who in my show is me, and then they read out questions, and then you have to put down the right answer, and the winner is whoever gets the most questions right.
Okay.
And they can win prizes such as money, or sometimes drinks vouchers, or sometimes some weird boxes of shit.
What kind of shit? Not actual shit, right?
No, well, that would not be weird. Many pub quizzes I've been to, just boxes of random things they have behind the bar, like magazines, bottles of alcohol, other things, oranges. There was an orange in a box that I won once in a pub quiz.
You won an orange in a box?
Yeah, I mean, there was more to it. There was other stuff in the box than just an orange.
I was going to say, it was hardly even worth putting it in a box, really. It's just an orange.
In a pot, yeah, so that was there. And, it was all sorts of drinks and... magazines and other weird things,
but objects. These pub quizzes happen in pubs all over the country every evening. There's always a pub quiz somewhere, and they're really, really, really popular. And we love this kind of thing. I'm sure that it happens in other countries too. I'm sure. Yeah. I'm convinced. But certainly,
it does.
It certainly is part of pub culture that every pub will put on a quiz on a quiet evening of the week, and you get these teams sitting around, and everyone's drinking beer and having a nice time, drinking wine and stuff. And the quiz master is reading out the questions, and it's a fun little community thing to do. And they're so popular that this is why pubs put them on, because it's a guarantee to get people into your pub, and you can sell a few drinks, and it's just a good way of attracting people into the public house. So you've cleverly incorporated a pub quiz into your comedy show as a way of drawing audience members into the show, and apparently it's working.
It has worked.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, that's great. So you've written then a series of questions. I guess the audience has to kind of try and answer the questions, and do you give out a prize or something at the end?
Yeah, there are prizes. Yeah. Okay. It's often a Darkness album. So the band The Darkness, who I'm particularly fond of, they're referenced throughout the show. So it's if I give a prize, then it's something I've spoken about previously in the show. So it gets a laugh as well.
Lots of callbacks.
Yes, there are lots of callbacks. And then there are callbacks in the questions as well. So, and we're reading out the answers. Sometimes I do a callback to something I said previously in the show, and it just seems to work quite well that way. Mm.
Yeah. Okay, that's good. Now, on the subject of pub quizzes, and by the way, this is the second time that you've been featured on this podcast on your own, Alex.
Yeah.
Which means that you've achieved twice as much as Paul Langton.
Twice? Only twice?
Well, at least twice. In fact, your episode was divided into two parts.
Yeah.
So actually, this is three times as much as Paul has achieved. Now, Moz achieved more than Paul too, because his episode was quite long. And we had quite a good chat, which involved quite a lot of swearing at the end, which meant that his conversation with me was extended. But you're in the lead at this point with three episodes.
Yeah.
Then Moz is in second place, and Paul is coming in a dismal third place here. So, you know, not only have you produced a best-selling, sold-out show at the Edinburgh Fringe, you're at this stage, you're coming first in the Luke's English Podcast Olympics.
To be honest, that was my plan all along.
Yeah.
That is what I wanted in life.
I thought so. Ultimately, that's what this is all about. Okay, so that's it for part one of the conversation. Did you notice all of the vocabulary that I listed at the beginning of the episode? Don't forget that you can find all of that language written on the page for this episode on my website. In part two, which should be available to you now, we do our little pub quiz in which we ask each other various questions, including some questions about the English language. So if you want to know what all of our questions are and who wins, then you can check out part two now. That's it, though, for this one. Thank you very much for listening. All I'd like to say at this point is join the mailing list. Go to my website and you can join the mailing list in the top right hand corner. That's a good way to get access to pages for these episodes immediately. You just get an email in your inbox and you can go straight to the page where you'll find all of the language listed and all the other things. You can download directly from the page as well. Don't forget to check out Audible and iTalkie. Send a donation to Luke's English Podcast if you want to say thanks. It's probably the most sincere way that you can say thanks. And other than that, just have a good day or night or morning or evening or afternoon or bus journey, train journey, gym session, walk, nap, jog or sleep or whatever it is you're doing while you're listening to this. Thank you very much for listening. I'll speak to you in part two, but for now, it's just time to say goodbye. Bye, 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 bye. Thanks for listening to Luke's English Podcast. For more information, visit teacherluke.co.uk.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
If you enjoyed this episode of Luke's English Podcast, consider signing up for Luke's English Podcast Premium. You'll get regular premium episodes with stories, vocabulary, grammar, and pronunciation teaching from me, and the usual moments of humour and fun. Plus, with your subscription, you will be directly supporting my work and making this whole podcast project possible. For more information about Luke's English Podcast Premium, go to teacherluke.co.uk/premium info.